Dreamcast.
Ayo, welcome to another edition of the Streamcast. I'm your host, Blackamora, as always, and today is a very special day because we got a very special guest, a leader, a pioneer, a game changer. Please join me in welcoming my guest today from She Plays Podcast, the host, Lauren.
Hi. Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for coming on. Appreciate it greatly. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Like, it's just a madhouse at the moment. You know, I'm transitioning in a lot of different sort of things. I have She Plays Games, but then I've just started a new role at Limit Break Mentorship. And then, but I'm still doing stuff with Final Fantasy Union, which is like, you know, it's kind of like the thing that it's the side hustle that I just can't let go of ever. Like, it's just, it is a part of me. And I will always sort of step in to help it. And, you know, yeah, so it's busy. It's busy, but it's good. It's busy and but in a fun way.
Yeah. Good busy.
Yeah, good busy. Yeah.
And we'll definitely get into all of that. She Plays Games, Limit Break Mentorship, and Final Fantasy Union. But let's get into you, Lauren, first of all. What is your first ever gaming memory?
Oh my goodness. So I would say probably the earliest memory that I have is of playing Super Mario, like the original Super Mario. So my aunt Trisha used to have an old Nintendo console, and you know, she had Super Mario 1 with Duck Hunt with the gun as well, which is so good. I love that so much. And then she had Super Mario 2, and then she had Super Mario 3. And I basically just went between those three at any given moment, like sort of testing things out. I really did love them. I never really beat any of them because it's just hard. Like, it's just a difficult game. Yeah. And I was like 5. But they really like helped me to sort of love games and see that there were things outside of what you could already see about the game, like secrets and stuff. Cause like there are so many secret areas that you could go into with Super Mario 3, especially that my aunt used to sort of like show off, that she could do and that kind of thing. But then aside from that, my dad surprised me with a Sega Genesis one Christmas. I didn't ask for it, didn't like want it, or like didn't know that I wanted
it. Want it.
Yeah, didn't want it, whatever. Sega Genesis, like, but for non-English viewers, of course, Sega Mega Drive. And yeah, like that was my first baby I had, like, you know. I think my first couple of games were probably Lion King and maybe Sonic 3D Blast. And they really kind of like, they made me a true gamer, really. Like I loved playing on my Genesis because it was just one of those things where I could go in the beginning of the day, like right before school. I used to have my friend Carissa over, and she used to try to get through Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Like, we would get through as much as we could before school and then have to leave. Well, I think we only ever really got up to the oil zone. I think that was like the furthest that we could get up to before school. But yeah, those are kind of like those are my foundations of gaming. So although I grew up, I was exposed to gaming from a Nintendo sense, I was very much a Sega baby.
Oh, that's wavy.
Yeah.
Also, the Sega Genesis is such a cooler name, I think. So.
Oh, it is interesting. Like, I don't know what the decision was about, like, the different names. They're just like, or unless they were different versions, because, like, I swear there was, like, something with how the hardware was. Like the hardware was different in either. But yeah, I mean, I will admit, I always wanted a Saturn because I thought that that was the coolest name, like a Sega Saturn. That is just so like trendy and sci-fi, and you know, naming a console after a planet is just like that's really cool.
Yeah, I often feel like I missed out on those consoles, especially the Sega ones, because they're not really around anymore in terms of a hardware sense. It feels like there's a lot that I missed out on, you know, with the whole Streets of Rage franchise and of course
Oh
Sonic.
My gosh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was like just the thing. It was such a lovely bit to be in because, you know, game development back then was so restricted. So like they really had to be creative in how they presented games. I loved how they could like really show characters in just such a few amount of pixels and really make things animated. I was just having a conversation on Twitter not too long ago about how amazing like Sonic the Hedgehog 3 was because, well, one, there was the there is the fun fact that Michael Jackson actually helped compose some of the music, helped arrange the music, and they are bangers. They are amazing. Like, oh my gosh, Ice Cap Zone is just like, it's so good. And like the ending theme, there's this guy on YouTube who literally will put Michael Jackson's vocals over Sonic music, and it sounds so good. Love it so much. But yeah, and then you know, the other thing with Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is that they were really like testing the boundaries of what 2D was like defined. So like this, there were like 3D 2D sections where Sonic would be able to go around the screen and stuff, and it was just so effective and so good. They really were masters of their specific sort of area of gaming. 100%.
Yeah, it feels like in retrospect Sega was ahead of the game on many occasions, and sometimes that can be a negative if the consumers aren't ready to, you know, accept it. That can be a bad thing. But yeah, looking back on it, they had some real bangers, and they were experimenting. They weren't just trying to play it safe. It's a shame. I wish, you know, Sega was still putting out consoles nowadays.
I know. And like, you know, some of the consoles, like the Dreamcast, I never got. So I never experienced the Dreamcast. But I know so many of my friends who did have Dreamcasts who say how it was their favorite console. And, you know, things like Shenmue, like I wish I experienced it slightly. So I had an older brother, and thankfully my older brother had a job when I was very young. So he used to blow all his money on like consoles. And whenever I would go to visit, because my parents were divorced, so whenever I would go to visit my mom's house, my brother's console setup would be there, and he would always have like the latest kit. So that's how I played through the beginning of Shenmue at least like 20 times, because I just get there and I just restart it and then just keep playing through the same bit over and over again. But I really loved the Dreamcast. That's the one regret that I have. That and the GameCube. That 100% those two.
Yeah, I missed out on the GameCube, but I'm one of those people that had the Dreamcast, and I can agree with every one of your friends that told you that it's a banging console.
Oh,
so good.
So good. Yeah. Yeah, and like even just the style of it, like the branding of it was just so nice and cool.
Yeah.
The games just look so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, obviously nowadays those graphics are very outdated, but at the time, like, games like Crazy Taxi and Sonic Adventure, Ready to Rumble, they looked cutting edge. So yeah, it was a lot of fun to play those games. Yeah.
No, completely agree.
From your first games, Nintendo baby, I guess Nintendo was your first experience, but you call yourself a Sega baby. How about your favorite games? How about your fave five games? Can you list off your favorite five games and why?
Okay, so even though I am a Sega baby, I was very much a PlayStation adolescent. Because
I like this.
Yes, it's a generational thing. So yeah, I transitioned from Sega to basically so I had a side hustle when I was 10. Basically they had this like what was it? A catalog that mm-hmm. you could get adults to buy things and you would get money back as a child. You would get money back off of anything. It was junk. It was like balloons and like stuff that people didn't need. But you know, my nana would always like give me money to like for it or whatever. And I don't actually know if she even got the things that she paid for. I don't know what happened with that situation. All I know was that I saved up money. I managed to save up enough money. And I really wanted at that time, an American Girl doll. I was determined I was going to make all these dreams come true because the American Girl dolls were like the mecca of just freaking girlish doll dreams. They were it. They were the moment. And I really wanted Samantha because she was smart and she had long brown hair, just like I did. But at the finish line, I completely 180'd and said, no, I want a PlayStation. I'm defying all expectations. Y'all were just like expecting this from me because I'm a girl and I'm just going to be like, F the patriarchy. I'm just going to get a freaking PlayStation. And so I decided to get a PlayStation instead. And that was the best decision that I ever did because like I freaking love PlayStation. I mean, I just, you know, I started off, I only had enough money for the console. And I started off with a PlayStation demo disc and that had Spyro, it had Cool Borders, it had Rugrats, it had an FMV for Parasite Eve. I was just like, I was showing this game off to everybody and it was a demo disc and it was so good. And yeah, it just really blew my mind like how much I loved everything about PlayStation and at that time particularly. In terms of like my favorite games, I mean, I do have a bit of like, I fleet a lot. So I have like a lot of different titles that I enjoy for various reasons. So if I can sort of think. So first I would say League of Legends.
Okay.
So that's kind of coming out of left field because I'm like gearing up for a PlayStation title. I'm going with League of Legends. But yeah. So League of Legends, it's because I don't want to forget it. League of Legends, I've grown up with for the last like 10 years. It was my first MOBA and the characters are sick. Riot is proving that they are a force to be reckoned with by releasing things like Arcane and, you know, a lot of the other decisions that they've made over the last like maybe few years, sort of controversy aside, they've really like set the bar as far as how you tap into your audience and then like keep it as polished as possible. Keep all of your titles as polished as possible because Arcane is gorgeous. I still have yet to play the Ruined King, which is the JRPG, like sort of RPG one, but Wild Rift is generally what I play right now, which is the mobile version of League of Legends, and it is the funnest thing ever. Like it's League of Legends, but it's shorter and it's on my phone and it's, you know, it takes a little bit to get used to the UI, but it's like I freaking love it. It makes me feel powerful. I love destroying people in the game, especially when I play characters that have lasers that can just like zap them out within like 5 seconds. Like I love it. I love getting my kill count really high. It's great. And teamwork as well is really fab. So like League of Legends is definitely League of Legends is definitely that one.
Yeah.
Next I'll go back to PlayStation and I'll say Jammer Lammy. And this one is a bit weird because it's have you heard of Jammer Lammy?
No.
So Jammer Lammy is the sister game to Parappa the Rappa.
Okay. Familiar with
So,
that.
Parappa the Rapper, I think, came out and it was a success. And then they released a spin-off title. I don't know if it was before or after Parappa the Rapper 2, but they released another title that was all about a girl rock band. And the lead guitarist's name is Lammy. And it's called Jammer Lammy. And it's basically just a story about a guitar playing lamb who's haunted by her nightmares and is just trying to get to her next gig on time, but she keeps getting stopped along the way by like random people. Like she gets stopped by a fireman, she gets stopped by a midwife who thinks that she's pregnant because she's eaten a lot of pizza, but she hasn't. She's just eating a lot of pizza, has a food baby. It's a Japanese wonder. Like it's so great. And the music is so good. It's such a good game. And I wish on God's green earth that they would like just freaking remake it so everybody can experience it because it is just like fantastic. But yeah, so that's like that. I just have such fond memories of playing that game. And then I'd say number three is Nier Gestalt, which is like Nier Replicant, the original version of Nier Replicant. That game affected me in so many ways. It's really, really an emotional game, particularly when you play through it the first time. Like it's just so sad. It's really, but the world building is just so good. It's so well done. I just to this day, I will never have as unique and as emotional experience as I've had with Nier Gestalt, and the music's incredible as well. Yeah, it's a really a fantastic title. And then Final Fantasy wise, my favorite is Final Fantasy, probably Final Fantasy X. It's a close tie, I feel like, because I'm playing through Final Fantasy VIII again at the moment, and I'm like, oh. It was Final Fantasy VIII was my first game, and I am having like a sort of a nostalgia throwback because it's such a great title, but like Final Fantasy X is the one that I go back to like all the time. I always get the itch to play Final Fantasy X again. The story is great. The voice acting is it's like I think it's good for the time. I don't see anything wrong with the voice acting really in most cases. It's funny. It has a really interesting look on how religion affects society and how, corruption within governments, corruption within governments really like harm and like control and this sort of thing. Like it's really, really, really deep when you get into it. I really, really love Final Fantasy X for that complexity. And then last and certainly not least, I gotta say Elden Ring. Oh, Elden Ring. It's so good. So I played that game for review. I am a really big Souls fan. Demon Souls is the first one I played, which is the first one of the sort of Souls-like series. And it was everything that I wanted from like the other game. So like I'm not really a huge Dark Souls fan. Bloodborne, I can take or leave, but it freaks me out too much for me to actually be able to play it effectively. It's just really creepy. I don't like plague people. I really don't.
Fair enough.
And so, but Elden Ring, I just adore. I really love the atmosphere. I love the character designs. I love the lore. I love the gameplay. It just took everything that I love about Souls games and just amplified it so much. And it was such a lovely experience when it came out and everybody was playing it. And we were all finding like these unique areas of the world because we were all exploring at the same time and finding these really hilarious, unique moments. My favorite is like there's this one, I don't know. Have you played Elden Ring?
I have not, but it's
Oh.
literally the next game I want to play after I
Oh,
finish
perfect.
that.
Fair enough. It's like so there's this one dungeon that you're in, and it's the most ridiculous thing, which is why I also love the game, because they just come up with the most ridiculous things. So you go in and there's like a bunch of skeleton people who slice at you, whatever. But you come into this one area, the floor is like basically lava, and you have like a couple roads that you can go on. And then you have these side bits that you can like sort of go in on the sides. The skeleton people pop out of those side bits, but meanwhile, you have this guy who's literally like this mechanical creature thing on what looks like a metal like log, like weird like thimble just contraption thing. And he just motors it down. He just is going down the hill, full speed ahead, taking everything in his path. And he wants to destroy you. And so he follows you around, like, you go into a different hill or whatever. And then he's just like, I'm here still, and tries to run you over again. But there are these bits where, you go into a little side passage, and the skeleton guy just like jumps out at you and leaps into the path that you've just come from. And you get into your little hole because you feel safe in there, and you look over, and the skeleton guy is starting to get himself up, starting to brush himself off, ready to fight you again. But all of a sudden, the steamroller guy just comes down and like completely just pastes him. And knocks it's so funny. And it's like those kind of see late things in games like Souls, those like little teeny tiny funny moments are just, oh, they just really make it. They really make it such a unique, fun experience. But yeah, that's probably my five, I think.
That's a very strong list, and I like the variety of genres.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like I never sort of like, I can also say there's also like a lot of other ones I could say, like The Sims, like I love those types of games. But yeah, no, I love a lot of what games have to offer. And there's no sort of cutoff point of what I will play. Unless it's an FPS, which I just suck at. I just accept that I suck at it. And sports games, I suck at both of them. Yeah, I just suck. Like I'll play them, but I just, yeah, I can't.
So I won't invite you to play COD,
Or you do, and you just laugh at my failure of being able to understand how to play an FPS.
I do love it how I feel everyone has that genre where no matter how hard they try, it just doesn't click for them. And to be fair, FPS is me as well. I can't do any of those games. I will stomach it if it's got a good story behind it, like Last of Us. I will play those, even though I don't know what I'm doing with those guns, but I can't
I
do them.
know. I still need to play through The Last of Us, honestly. I keep getting freaked out though, because like, do you identify it as scary? Like, do you think it's scary?
Oh yeah, that's a horror game.
Yeah,
Those are horror games.
okay. Because some people are just like, it's not that scary. And I'm like, have you seen a clicker?
Have you heard them do their clicking noise and then jump out at you? They're overgrown mushrooms. That's horror.
It's really freaking scary. And they're just like, nah, it's not that scary. I still might try it someday. Like, I got through BioShock, which really freaked me out too.
I would say Bioshock's a horror as well. It's got horror
Yeah.
elements.
But yeah, but I do wanna, but it's worth, for you, it was worth it, wasn't it?
Oh yeah,
Last of Us.
absolutely. It's some of the richest storytelling I've ever seen, and we've seen the success translate into the HBO series now. And now the rest of the world, non-gamers, are understanding, hey, this is a really good story. Now that I don't have to, pick up a pad, I understand how good it is. Such a good story.
I
Worth
know.
playing. Even if you do turn around and say, it wasn't worth it for you, or you thought it was average, I think it's still worth that experience it at least one time.
Yeah, and it definitely, I mean, I love Naughty Dog, you know, like it was, to be fair, Crash Bandicoot was the first game I ever got for my PlayStation. My Nana, bless her, I got a really good report card, and she said basically that she was going to take me to the, she was going to take me to the game store and was just like, you know, just pick out a game, pick out any game you want, and like, I'll get it for you for getting such good grades. And I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, I was ecstatic as a kid, and I picked out Crash Bandicoot, and you know, that the rest was history. Like, I loved Crash Bandicoot, I loved Uncharted, and you know, I just think Naughty Dog's so strong. Like, they're so strong in how they and how they've created their games, and you never would think that Naughty Dog would be responsible for The Last of Us from like Crash Bandicoot,
right
like it's just like a weird like Tasmanian devil creature with like big heads just following you going ooga booga and The Last of Us.
I mean, it's just perfect evolution, I see, you know?
Yeah. From the, can you imagine? From the creators that brought you the intense Last of Us, now brings you Crash Bandicoot.
See, if it went the other way around, I think that's a much tougher sell.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be so great, though. But yeah, no. Yeah, I know. I need to. So you need to get on Elden Ring, and I need to get on The Last of Us.
I actually need to get on Uncharted as well.
Exposed
on how many games I haven't played.
Oh, that's okay. It's a journey. It's like you get to experience, like, that's the exciting bit, isn't it? It's the games that you get to experience for the first time that are just so good.
During the pandemic, I played Bioshock for the first time, and that was a trip. I really enjoyed it. I started off hating it because it's a shooting game, but
yeah, you know,
there's that twist, and throughout my time playing the game, obviously I'm getting better, and I'm kind of understanding why the game is what it is. So
yeah,
it was a tremendous experience.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, my husband never got on with it, so Daryl never really liked the sort of like system of Bioshock. Like, he's, I don't know, like he just didn't really gel with it. For me, it was pretty much my first FPS experience with a story. And like, it's funny because like my friend in university, Joe, him and I had such a fun bond because we were like brother and sister. It really reminded me of that type of relationship, because like, he would play all the scary games that I couldn't play myself, and I would just watch. So I watched him play Condemned Criminal Origins.
Oh,
and that was, he actually had to return it the next day because it was just so scary. it's just like, no, I'm not talking about that anymore. But he'll play through, like, he would be like the one playing through like Resident Evil, and like, I used to hijack his PlayStation to play Devil May Cry, and but Bioshock was the one that I finally was just like, you know what, I'm going to play it myself as well, because like, he seemed like he was having so much fun with it. And I was just like, it is such a fun atmosphere. Like, it's just, I mean, hell, I wish that they could have made a movie from it. Like, I think that they've been talks about it for ages, but like, I think it would work so well as a movie or as TV series.
Yeah. I think with modern games, there is almost that template now that, okay, we're writing this as if it's a TV show or as if it's a movie. I get that feeling, at least. I know in the build-up to God of War, the 2018 game, the actress who went on to play Freya read the script and thought it was for Game of Thrones. So the quality of storytelling in games has just increased so much over the last 10, 20 years even. It's not a surprise that I feel we could easily have an hour-long podcast talking about which games would make successful movies and vice versa.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. But yeah, no, it's so cool.
Yeah. One thing I personally love about a lot of the stories that you've been telling, or I guess when you know you've been taking me through your life as a gamer, there's always someone else taking you through, or there's always someone else playing or enjoying those games with you, whether it's your nan or whether it's your friend. I really appreciate that, and it just drives home the point that gaming is meant to be enjoyed with other people. Of course, you can have single player experiences, but I feel its purest form is just you and a friend, or you and someone else, either sharing games, playing games together, or as you said, you watching your friend play through a game. I feel that's just the magic of gaming. It
Oh,
can be
yeah.
enjoyed. Yeah, it can be enjoyed without you having to actually play the game. And I think that's just beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it is. Like, it's something that, like, so many of the old fogies just don't get. Like, they'll just look at us with streaming and they're just kind of like, why do you watch somebody else play the game? But it's exactly that. It's like, like we just enjoy it. Like it's nice. It's fun to like interact with somebody. It's fun to see what choices they make. And you get introduced to games that, yeah, you wouldn't normally play. Like there's so many indie games that I would not have played had I not encountered them from other people. And it's really is a lovely experience. You're exactly right. And I think it's something that we share in this medium that's really unique compared to like anything else. Like you kind of have it with movies, maybe, like, oh, that part really scared me or something, or
Yeah.
it made me really sad. But it feels like because you actually did it in a game, like it adds that like extra level of just of enjoyment with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the interactivity is the secret to why gaming is so addictive and why it is now getting the flowers that, you know, it so richly deserves. As you said, with movies, you can have, okay, we'll talk about this in 72 hours, you know, spoilers. Same with TV series, but with gaming, as you quite rightly said, it's you doing those, playing, pressing those buttons, succeeding with those QTEs, watching those cutscenes. Yeah, I think the involvement of the player is what gives gaming its source. Before we get on with the rest of the podcast, I'd just like to give a special shout out to Spilt Milk Studios for their support over on Patreon. To find out how you can get a shout out just like them, make sure to go to patreon.com/streamcast for more.
It's so funny, actually, like just to say as well, like yesterday, my girls are really obsessed with Minecraft at the moment. Well, Allie's mostly obsessed with Minecraft. Lizzie follows suit. But basically, I was showing them my island because I've just started up a save with the mountain, and so they we were I was digging, and Allie was getting really freaked out because she didn't like the fact that I was mining. I'm playing in survival mode. She doesn't play in survival mode because it's just too scary. It's way too scary. Like honestly, survival mode in Minecraft is a horror game. It's freaky as AF. And it was so funny because we were going down this little thing, and I finally reached like sort of I reached a sort of limit where I was just like, okay, I've reached a cave, I've reached water, or whatever. And all I could see was this little creeper popping its head up, just like. And I was just like, look, it's a creeper, look at him. And they just started bursting out laughing. And I'm like, look at his face, look at his face. And he's just like, hello, how are you doing? And I like make these voices. And the girls are just like, you're so funny about me. And then all of a sudden, this skeleton came up. And I hate the skeletons in Minecraft because I can never avoid them. They shoot things at you, and I can never, ever avoid them. So I started freaking out and running out and locking them up and said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. But it's like those kind of small moments that, like, I just love that. I just love that I shared that with them. And and they enjoy mummies, sassy silliness.
See, that's such a unique experience that you can't replicate through watching the show or playing through a movie. And who's to say that they weren't gonna start screaming when they saw the creeper popping their head out, right? So, that is the thing that I love about gaming, that unpredictability. And once again, even if it is just you in the gaming sense, the character who dies, that's still an effect that you don't want to mess with, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff when it comes to gaming, and like we were saying, it's just a magical experience. It's a great medium to enjoy stories and to enjoy each other's company.
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about She Plays podcasts, She Plays Games podcast, because that is another medium that you've been able to share, and that's something that we have in common because we're both podcasters. And I think it's more difficult than people give it credit for, I would say.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, it's a thing, right? Like, so many, even since I've started She Plays Games, so many podcasts like mine have appeared and then just after maybe a few months have just said no. Like, they just can't, they just don't continue it anymore. Because it is, it's a grind. It's a lot of the times you are funding it yourself. You know, all of the hosting, all of the mics, you're organizing, you're getting all the guests on, which can be really stressful, and doing all the research. Like, it's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff goes into a podcast.
Absolutely. So as one of the successful ones, I would say, tell me about your experience starting the podcast. I know it goes a little bit into Final Fantasy Union, so I'm
going to
put that after. So that would be like 1A. I guess talk to me about making the transition into She Plays Games, how that process started. The difficulties early on with podcasting, as you said, is all you, money, time, your skills, your networking. And tell me about how you got it to where it is today, because you've got a few sponsors, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to add in an applause soundtrack there.
Thank you. I mean, the sponsorships, I'm still not comfortable with it. Like, I'm terrible at asking for money. I'm really, really bad. I'm so nervous. I get so scared. And, I'm so appreciative of the sponsorships that I do have. And it's so important to, like, ask for, like, sort of, like, you know, selling yourself, right? Like, just sort of saying, like, you know, I have this impact. Like, I am someone who's speaking to a group of people, and, you know, really own up to the fact that, like, you know, you are offering a service, and that service does deserve some funding in order for you to keep it going. And, you know, so with SPG, I just kind of started it. Like, I wasn't really thinking about where it could go. I didn't think about money, really, because I knew with Final Fantasy Union and Kingdom Hearts Union, we barely made anything from those, like, podcasts, particularly with ads. Like, we didn't ever explore really a lot of monetizing options for those series, even though we were the biggest in what we were doing. We were the biggest Final Fantasy podcast. We were the biggest Kingdom Hearts podcast. But basically, I was just really burnt out from everything with Final Fantasy Union that I decided I wanted to do something for myself. And I also really thought that there was a gap for podcasts that focused specifically on women in the games industry. And I just kind of did a lot of self-reflecting, just sort of thinking about, like, what I would have wanted as a kid, because when I grew up, I didn't have any role models. Like, I couldn't really see much of what I could be, because I just didn't think it existed. You know, I sort of thought maybe I wanted to be an actress, didn't really have a place to go, like, didn't really know where to take it. I was really good at art. Like, I was really good at drawing, doodled all the time. But, like, you know, everybody would sort of say, oh, what do you want to be? Like, you want to be a Disney artist? Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And so, like, I didn't really have those positive voices around me who would really help me to, like, sort of point me to the way, because I really needed that. you know, there's some people who can find their way without it, which like those kind of people are amazing. But for me, I felt like I kind of, I felt a bit forgotten because I had a single family home. My dad was working his butt off to like take care of us. And, you know, the other voice I had was my Nana, and my Nana, bless her soul. She was happy with whatever I did. She just, if she wanted me, like she wanted me to have a living, but she mainly just saw me as a receptionist, which is like completely legitimate career.
Yeah.
It just is not, it's just not where I felt my sort of skill set was set to. And, sure. You know, it's really actually ridiculously hard to get receptionist jobs as well. Like, you know, it's one of those things where you need to like know somebody, or the planets need to align for a reception. Like I never see, particularly in the games industry, like I think a lot of the times maybe office manager jobs come up maybe, but it's very rare that they do, particularly now when it's like remote work as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I just had no direction. And I just sort of thought like, what would I have needed in order to have that? And then I thought, you know, well, one thing I do have in my arsenal is podcasting, because I've been doing it for the last decade. I know how to build a podcast. I have the tools in order to make it happen. Like we had all the, you know, microphones and stuff. I just needed a name. I needed guests, and I needed sort of just to figure out the logistics of and the branding. So thankfully, I had some time. I could create my own branding initially, and then the guests. I did a lot of cold calls. I had some people who I knew in the industry from when I was a journalist, but you know, it was. At times it was very hard to get a hold of them, because they'd gone off and done like other, like very sort of, they were very successful, you know. Season two, I had, Kelsey Christo from Twitch on, and, her, I knew from back when I was, starting out, and, you know, we could never get her. We could never find a time to organize in season one, even though I had asked her in season one. And it happens like all the time. Like that's not like anything weird, like that the kind of delayed process of organizing somebody to come on the show and like working out schedules. I mean, you know, everybody's busy. Everybody's got stuff going on and have different commitment levels. And so, yeah, that first year particularly, I felt really, really stretched out, but excited about like finding new people. And, you know, I had quite a few initially. I had like Ellie Rhodes, who she used to work at, Ubisoft, and then I had Sandra Chow, who was one of my friends I knew from Final Fantasy UK fans from back in the day. And now she works at Square Enix, which is really cool.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like, you know, these sort of people. But it was a lot of cold calling. But one of my reprieves came from this woman, Mary Claire, from an initiative called Women in Games, reached out to me about coming to the Women in Games Festival. And, you know, I didn't really know what it was. It was the first time I'd ever been in like sort of invited to go to an expo like that. And I like only just started SPG, but I was just like, wow, this is a really amazing opportunity. So I like, you know, I got myself all set up for it, had it prepared of who I wanted to sort of speak to, so I could get some contacts to like get people on the show and that type of thing. And it was a lot of me just sort of pitching what I was to whoever would listen to me. And I got a few people to say yes from that. 'Cause meeting people in person is just such a, such a much better experience than than anything else. Like, honestly, like it's just, for me, it's such an easier experience trying to talk about that, like talk about SPG and stuff. And yeah, and actually, like, through that is how I met my friends Nerd Pirates, Victoria and Lily, who are amazing, and they actually did the branding that I have now for SPG. They created my branding deck and stuff. So it's like those kind of people who I met through that really propelled my propelled SPG forward and made it what it is now. And even like Anissa, who runs Limit Break Mentorship, I met her at that event as well. Gave her my name, and she was the last episode I had for that season. So yeah, it was just, yeah, starting out, it just came from a lot of heart and a lot of want to make the industry a better place, but also make a space that wasn't necessarily going to exploit women and their traumas. That was the biggest objective that I had, was that I did not want to make the podcast about exploiting women's sort of upsets about the industry. Because I've just felt like, you know, there was definitely places that you could do that. A lot of people releasing, you know, manifestos and articles and Twitter threads about like the horrible things that they've witnessed in the games industry. And I thought that, you know, they are 100% valid in those things. But I just didn't want to make my show. I didn't want to make my show about that. I wanted to just have these like positive sort of inspiring themes so that we could make the industry a better place and that type of thing. So yeah, that's basically how it went.
Amazing. And I do appreciate that last point as well, because I feel, as you said, while it's completely valid, I do feel that there is a lot of people who try to emulate that. Mm. Almost, I don't know if trauma porn or torture porn is the right terminology, but almost getting the same, you know, the same people to come up with the same experiences so they can put it on their platform and get the clicks and the engagement. Yep. But then where is the solution to that?
Yeah, exactly. We're just like throwing it into air.
Right? You're just, I don't know. I feel, yeah, like, I think you said it better than I am trying to. But yeah, okay. I feel like those spaces are completely valid, but I think it's very important to also show that, oh, we're not just people that you come to when you want a sad story. We also have our own gaming lives as well. We have our own characters. We have our own likes, dislikes, etc. So it's very important to have that space carved out. And yeah, I've got to just commend you for making that space. Yeah. And now, as you said, there's always going to be others once you see something, you know, successful. You know, once a blueprint comes out, everyone's going to try and copy it and put their own spin on it. And, you know, the ones with the USPs that are worth it stick around. So,
yeah.
Congrats to you for that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, like, hell, like, you know, there's definitely days where it does get a lot. And you sort of think, like, holy hell, like, you've not edited the podcast on time. And you're just, like, trying your hardest to put it out. And then, like, you know, some podcasts, when you start looking at the numbers, you're just kind of like, oh my gosh, like, wait, that one didn't do as well as that one. And I like, you do kind of start second guessing yourself, particularly when you're first starting out and whether or not you're making a difference. But like, yeah, it's like, if you stick with it, particularly, you know, interviewing style podcasts and stuff, like, there will be a time where things will pick up. Or if it doesn't lead to that podcast necessarily being the thing that defines you, it will lead hopefully to something else that will, which is what, like, I've done as well, like just sort of, you know, the opportunities that I've had to be able to talk with people at places like Google and that type of thing, like they've been, it's been so, so incredible. Never would I have thought that like SVG would have led me to those places. So, you know, you never know it, but it's just one of those things where, yeah, just hitting record, as the cliche goes, like just hit and play, just hit record. And, you know, everything will, you know, work out. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It feels like Let's Start a Podcast is the millennial version of Let's Start a Band. You know, yeah. Back in the '80s and the '90s and the '90s as well, let's say.
Yeah.
You had your friendship circle, your trust circle, and yeah, you'd go into business together, and
It always makes you laugh.
I'm sure you get it a lot. I've been approached a couple of times by friends who are like, oh, we want to do our own podcast. And then I'm like, excellent. What is it about? And they don't know.
I know. Oh, bless them. But it is, I always have my ear out for anybody who, like, I will just, you know, give them everything that they need. I mean, like right now, I've been helping out my friend Liddell build out. They play games podcast. I started that conversation basically because, like, I think especially in women's space, there's a lot of anger and upset because, like, frequently non-binary and non-gender conforming people are roped into the same space. And it's a shame because it's like, yeah, they have their own voices, they have their own things that they want to bring to the table, and they don't identify as she, her, you know, like they shouldn't just be roped in with women. And so, you know, I identified that, and I just sort of thought, like, I just didn't want to be, I wanted that podcast to exist, but I didn't think that it was right for my voice to be behind it because I am not gender non-conforming or non-binary. I am a woman. I am a cis woman. So I was just on the hunt, sort of provisionally since last year for somebody to sort of take that mantle over and, make it sort of this lovely success. And, Liddell thankfully, came out from, you know, another friend, Sarah. They basically were just like, you know, Liddell, I think, would be a really great fit for this. And so I reached out to Liddell, and then we've had like quite a few chats about how to build the podcast. I made the branding quite similar. We talked about the branding and that type of thing. And and that's basically how that is. I just wanted to pay it forward, really, you know, like really make sure that Liddell was like prepared for any obstacles that may happen, but also help like a different group of people to feel visible and have the same effects, the same positive effects that She Plays Games has had on women. I just wanted for non-binary, non-gender conforming people as well. So yeah, it's been a really lovely experience. And I'm so happy for Liddell. I think like it's turning out really, really great, and there's such great support for it. And Liddell is just so awesome. I love them so much.
I will say, I think those two podcast, She Plays Games and They Play Games, very important. And I think that they are going to stand the test of time. Aww. I think you are going to get the effect that you desired, where you're going to have little children who identify as women or identify as non-binary. They're going to look towards your podcast and will cite them as role models. Yeah. And I think that's such a big step forward in representation. Because with men and with, you know, white people, white men, there are a lot of people to look up to. There are a lot of people on TV or in the movies to compare yourself to find some sort of relation to. So I don't want to use marginalized, but with these communities, it is very important to have something out there that is,
yeah,
you know, shining a positive light, most importantly, on the niche that is gaming.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, yeah, we have to really raise the voices of everybody, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're not to be morbid, but it's like, we're not going to be around forever. You know, we have to make sure that the games industry doesn't collapse because we're not able to, because like people are either, you know, not able to share their stories, or things don't get seen by the right people, and that type of thing. Like, it is so important to really, really, you know, keep it going, and keep people informed about, you know, their options, and who's actually like behind their favorite games as well.
Yeah, very important. I think that's one of the positives brought on by social media and the advancement, yeah, of technology over the past 20 years. It's so accessible. Everyone's accessible. You know, the creator of your favorite game is a tweet away.
And
just like that, you could build friendships, relationships with people that you might never meet face to face. It's really beautiful.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
So we'll take a little bit of a retrospective now, because I feel this is a huge part of, you know, you as a presenter, as a host. Talk to me about Final Fantasy Union.
Go into
Kingdom Hearts Union as well.
Yeah. Well, basically, so another anecdote. So when I was in high school, I did have one friend, my friend Lauren, who was just as geeky as me, and it was great. And, you know, but she was really, really dedicated to like community, like online communities and stuff. Whereas I wasn't really, I was much more of a recluse, hermit. And she approached me one day and just sort of said like, look, I have a friend who's thinking of putting together a Kingdom Hearts podcast. And this was like a decade ago, so podcasts weren't really like a big thing yet. And I was just kind of like, okay. And she's just like, do you want to be on it? Do you want to be on my podcast and talk about Kingdom Hearts for like an hour? I'm like, yes. And so that's basically how it started. Our friend Kyle basically said that they, like, you know, wanted to have a show with sort of three other people. And all of us just talk about Kingdom Hearts. And it was really like a nice stepping stone into the world of podcasting. I would go over to Lauren's house. We would chat for like an hour, and keep up with news. I really learned how to build like outlines for podcasts and that type of thing, and got my feet wet and how to like sort of talk about things, and just sort of have conversations on podcasts and that type of thing. And then from there, I basically like moved on. So Kyle came to me asking if I wanted to do game reviews. And I said, okay. So basically, like, it's a lot of me just saying okay to things that I wasn't really sure I was good at. But, you know, in life, you just got to say okay sometimes to things that you're not comfortable with. So I said, sure. Like, I liked games. I knew games. It was fine. And then that's when I met my now husband, Daryl, who ran the website with Kyle. And it was so funny because, like, he admitted to me later that he gave me a really crap game to review just because he had, like, instances, not crap game. Well, we won't say crap game because Trials HD is not a crap game, but less risky game. Like, it wasn't like Assassin's Creed, which like if they had given that to me and then I just said peace, like that would have ruined their relationship with Ubisoft for like ever, you know, like this would had the least bit amount of like of being blacklisted to show that I was really serious about what I was doing and that kind of thing. And so I played through Trials HD. I reviewed it for the first time. And they liked it enough, so they kept me on, and I actually got to play Assassin's Creed 2 for a review, which was like, that was the coolest thing, having this first game that I got to play before everybody else. I was just like, this is the dream. Like, this is amazing. from there, Kingdom Hearts Union grew, but then they had a sister podcast called Final Fantasy Union, and I was a part of that too. So they sort of brought me in. So then I started doing two podcasts at once. And then I think over the years we collected a load. I mean, I think at one point I was literally doing about 5 podcasts at one time, which is just like insane. I wasn't editing them, thank God.
Okay.
we hired somebody for that. Smart. But like it was a lot of podcasts. And it was like, you know, we had a general gaming one, we had one for our community, we had one for Final Fantasy Union, one for Kingdom Hearts Union, and it was just craziness, but it was really fun. And then, you know, Daryl and I, when we got married, unfortunately Daryl had to get a job. Like it was fine, like it would have been fine, but like essentially for me to move over and stuff, it was that thing of like, you know, having a solid foundation. And like, yeah, so Daryl kind of had to put Gaming Union on the back burner, and kind of take a side role to it, whereas he was like kind of the leader of it. But unfortunately in his absence, it just kind of depleted significantly. And then sadly it just kind of died a very slow death. It was a really nice time while we had it though. Like it was just such a cool experience being a part of the games news team. I did a lot of games, like I did a lot of news stories, a lot of reviews, a lot of like editorial. So I really got to practice a load of different skills that I wouldn't have practiced otherwise. And I really enjoyed that. But then I kept on with Final Fantasy Union for whatever reason. I just sort of thought like, you know, I just didn't want to let it die. Mm-hmm. Like I was fine with Gaming Union dying, but I wasn't okay with Final Fantasy Union dying. And Final Fantasy Union is actually the thing that Daryl started up initially. Yeah. So Daryl, when he first created GamingUnion.net, it was his first site was all about Final Fantasy. It was a Final Fantasy based website. And so, you know, I don't know. I just felt like something was there still. And I'd always wanted to be big on YouTube for some reason. I always wanted to be a content creator. I think it's because I grew up with YouTube, because like I was watching it back when like Boheme was big, like doing his weird webcam reviews of videos and stuff, and like Over the Hill 88 and like all these really old school YouTubers. I was invested in the YouTuber drama. Holy hell, that was great.
Oh my days. Do you remember when like they would use videos to call each other out and it
was reply
with video?
Oh my god, the reply videos. Where like I'm so happy that TikTok actually has that. Like they kind of took it over now, haven't they? Yeah, like they finally brought back like really pointed video responses. Oh
yeah, easy to track, easy to follow.
So good. And you know, I was a spicy teenager. I lived for it. But I just always wanted to be a part of something. Like I didn't really want to be a YouTuber in the way that everybody else was doing it. I kind of just wanted to create things that were magical and things that I like were musical and almost like trailer like I didn't really want to create things that were I the only word I can think of is like beautiful, But yeah, just something that's like something that means something that has like a meaning behind it. I just really wanted to create that kind of videos. And so I started playing around with Final Fantasy Union's YouTube. We did like interviews to start with voice actors, which did okay, but we played around with news posts. And then it wasn't until about 2015 when we finally decided, let's try and do like an sort of more editorial piece. Let's do like, a guide for Final Fantasy 15, which had just come out. Like, let's do some guides for it. We were a bit late to the party, but we thought, you know what, it might still have some life in it. And so we released our first video. I edited it. Daryl did the voiceover slash writing and research, because he's really good at research. And like we realized that it made like 5 quid, but like we just thought, like, that's the most that we ever made on something like that we've created. And like, maybe we can make more. Maybe we can like make this into work. Like, because I was working a full-time job at that time. I'd just gone on maternity. I'd been on maternity leave, and like they were not playing ball with my sort of request to work from home or anything. So I was like in two minds of whether or not I wanted to sort of go back to that. And then yeah, we just sort of thought, like, you know what, let's just go for it. And sure enough, like things started to work, and like our YouTube channel started to grow. And we got up to like 100,000 subscribers, and we were just like, this is really sick. We got our little piece, our little YouTube plaque. And then now we're about like 2,700 subscribers on YouTube. And like we've just keep going and going, and we've released a book, which we're still fulfilling. We're still sending out all the books, because we did a Kickstarter campaign, and managed to sell like a lot of books. But we are still making our way through it, despite the UK's like freaking collapse of Royal Mail and everything else under the sun. It's been so stressful. But yeah, Final Fantasy Union has been a lot of reviving, a lot of like sort of Phoenix moments of, is this as far as we can take it? And then eventually we just find something else that can make it more. And it was really sad. Like, I kind of stepped away from it when I started SPG, just because like I just don't know. I think I was just feeling burnout from everything. Like, although I'm really like passionate about video editing, I'm really like I'm decent at video editing. Video editing is boring at times. It's like it's such a grind. And if you're doing like 20-minute videos, like it is exhausting. Like even now when Daryl's like, "Can you do this video for me?" I'm just like, "Oh, okay, I'll do it." Like, because I really do like it, but you get to a point where you're like 7 hours down the line and you still have 5 minutes left to edit, and you know that it's going to take you like still a couple more hours to do. You're just like, I can't. Like, my brain and willpower are gone. I keep snacking on everything. Like, it's just, it's a lot. I had stepped away a bit, but I'm still kind of there. I'm there in spirit, and when they need big guns to come in and show them a thing or two. But yeah, we have like a really great team now. We have like a few we have a couple video editors, a couple writers, which has been really nice as well, because like you just sort of think like I would have loved this type of role when I was like in university and that type of thing, like starting out, like being paid in order to do like video editing and stuff. That's sick. That's amazing. Not having to work at Friendly's where I was making ice cream splits for people. That was fantastic. But yeah. So yeah, Final Fantasy Union has been responsible for a lot of really good things in my life, including my husband. But yeah.
It's pretty right at the top, right?
Yeah. Oh, and so is. He's adorable. He's just like, oh, I'm so jealous of him though, because he got to go to the Final Fantasy 16 preview event. He got to play Final Ooh. Fantasy 16, and I didn't because I made other plans and I was sad and it didn't happen. But
wait, the plans that you made to not go to the preview event, they fell through?
Oh no, they didn't fall through. I did go. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, it was like it was great what I did.
Okay.
But at the same time, I wish I could have done both.
Yeah, I get it.
I wanted to do everything. I wanted that little like weird time turner thing from the franchise that will not be named to just go back in time so that I could just do everything that I wanted to do. Mm. But alas, I did not. So I'll have to wait my turn eventually.
At least it was your choice and not you being snubbed or something. That would have been outrageous.
yeah, no, definitely. But it's okay.
There'll be future events.
I hope so. I'll just like tie myself to Square Enix's offices to just be like, please let me in. I just want to play.
You got some time next week?
Like, oh, why is she here again? It's just like, I love you guys. In. I know. I just love you all. Just let me in. But yeah.
So we had touched on earlier the importance of having a women-led, women-focused podcast and a non-binary-focused podcast as well. But I feel it's just as important to have those voices, those characters on the screen as well, in the games that we enjoy and play. So this is a very interesting point now, because we are here at a time where we are seeing more women lead games. So we've got Ellie on The Last of Us. We've got Layla on Redfall. How do you feel the stories and the portrayal of women in games have evolved over the years as well?
It's interesting, actually, because I just did a TikTok not too long ago where I was really going through each year from, like, I think about 30 years ago was where I kind of, like, cut off, maybe even more. But essentially, yeah, I was just, like, trying to figure out, like, a pivotal woman character in each of the years that sort of represented where women were in games, like at that point. It was interesting because there were some years where like it was a struggle to find like a decent like women character that I felt like represented that time. And you know, it's interesting because like I do think like Aeneas Sarkeesian, despite like all the freaking, you know, controversy that came out of Feminist Frequency and that type of thing, like I think like she was really ahead of everything and really helped to generate a conversation that needed to happen about how we view women in games. And like, you know, she was met with a lot of resistance at that time about like, you know, whether or not it was worth it, whether or not what she was saying was sound and whether or not it mattered. And but I think, you know, since then, so many games have changed the way in which they viewed women characters and how they present women characters that's like really made it so that we see a lot of diversity now that we hadn't seen before. Granted, it's still a work in progress. There's still a lot to be done. But I do think we're doing a lot. I do think a lot is being done for women in games and women's stories. I mean, it would be great as well if the diversity of the people at the table sort of, you know, writing the stories was as diverse as like sort of the characters that they're presenting. But I think like that's turning now too, in some instances, like particularly my favorite always to bring up is Mary Kenny, who's just awesome. She's working at Insomniac, and she's just so cool. The fact that like, you know, she worked on Miles Morales and like really, really fought for things like the fact that there was a character who could perform sign language, you know, like it's just like, it's really lovely that people are being invited to the table who deserve to be invited to the table. And, you know, yeah, I think a lot is starting to be done in that regard. But yeah, it's just like that bit more. I really loved Returnal though. And I'm blanking on the lead character's name for whatever reason. But like, I really loved Celine. Yeah, Celine. So Returnal was about, it's a bit of a spoiler, but it was about a woman who's going through some family crisis. But it was a really unique storyline for a woman character in a game to have that. And like, you know, it was nice. And like, yeah, she's a strong person. She's a strong character. She doesn't make any excuses. Like there's no sort of like weirdness put into her character to make her seem like, I don't know, something of the male gaze or whatever. And also, like, I mean, a lot of the team who created Returnal were extremely diverse at Housemarque. And so, like, you know, it was an incredible feat for women in games, particularly with that game. But yeah, I think there's a lot being done. I think it just, yeah, we just need to kind of work internally though as well on how diverse our tables are, both in gender, but then also in ethnicity as well, since, you know, you can't just have all people who look like me at the table. Like that's right. Not diversity. You know, it has to be everybody.
Yeah, agreed. I think you've answered that question beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
Like a lot is being done now is very key. And I think that is ultimately that's the stance I have. I think it's embarrassingly late and slow you know, the industry has turned around. But I think there are things being done in a positive light to put women in the lead of games, despite all of the criticisms, or I don't think it's criticism, hate, you know, all of the crap that they have to deal with. So with Last of Us, Ellie, for example, putting her face on the front cover caused so much controversy.
And then like freaking Abby's arms, like what the hell? Like just let a girl have arms. Like what the, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
That was crazy because first I loved Abby. Like yeah. I thought she looked badass. I thought she was cool.
Yeah.
I was really, how to phrase this? People on Twitter really made me think twice about getting Last of Us 2 because they made it come across so negative. I know they were, you know, spoiling stuff left, right, and center.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But the way they were talking so negatively about trans representation and the wording they used made it seem like Abby was the trans one. For obvious reasons, because she's muscular. And that was really off-putting, just having that discourse around. I'm glad that we ended up getting the game and playing through it and enjoying it, loving it. And all of that, I don't even know what the term is, but it's almost fear-mongering. It was just all for naught, because the actual representation was so inoffensive to anyone who isn't, you know, just blind with rage.
Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, trans person would be offensive anyway, but it was made such a big deal about nothing.
Yeah.
This was actually really cool and a massive step forward for representation of women in games and of trans people in games. The fact that they had an actual trans person act as Lev. The fact that Ellie, Dina, Abby had moments where they all were insufferable. They all had their bad moments. They all had their good moments. It felt 3D. No one ever felt black or white. It was just shades of gray. And it just felt like a realistic soap or a movie where you don't agree with anyone 100% of the time, but you can kind of see the motivations. And I still think that's one of the best games of all time. It's great. It's crazy to me. Growing up, Lara Croft was a very pivotal female character, but I don't know. I didn't play those games, so I can't really speak for whether those games were actually good or whether it was, you know, done for the male gaze, as you say.
Yeah. I mean, I played those games growing up, like, to be fair, like I was actually like a bit resistant, like initially, like I will be honest, like I was a bit resistant initially to the whole like women movement because I found characters like Lara Croft very empowering. So it took me a bit to sort of realize like what to really like sort of get my mind around the fact that like even though I liked these characters, it was setting a standard that could have like a lot of negative impact. And, but yeah, like I do love Lara Croft. Like, I think that she really like just propelled the idea that like a woman can be strong in a video game. The way that they did it was, you know, acceptable back then. It was something that they did to basically just, you know, bring in everybody and they accomplished that. But yeah, it is kind of like that thing of like they set that bar then and then they just have to keep setting it higher and make the characters better. But there again, like, you know, saying that, I mean, Samus has been around forever and, you know, people are still always surprised. It's sad that it is the case that people are still surprised that she is a woman.
She's a woman.
But she is a freaking woman and she's awesome. But yeah, like I definitely felt like Lara Croft did provide a necessary impact in sort of like how people should have, like how games should have women lead characters and how women lead characters could sell games effectively.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just still a little bit problematic by today's standards of women characters, but I still love it. Tomb Raider, I still want to be Lara Croft. I still want to swan dive off a freaking waterfall like she does. So it's all just an evolution. It's all just like, you know, people say that minds don't change, but they do. They 100% do. Like, you know, information, it does unfortunately take a while to get out into the sort of nether space of normal people. But like eventually it does. Like I'm having so many conversations now about like pronouns with my mom friends and like things about, you know, sort of what's going on Twitter, like what's the latest discourse, what is dabbing, you know, like all these type of things. Like I'm trying to like you know, they see me like essentially interact with their children on a way that's just different to them, where they don't, that the common phrase is always just like, oh, like this just goes over my head. And I'm just like, okay, I'll help you in the darkness of dabbing and what dabbing means to people. It's an interesting time, but I am trying to do the Lord's work of just informing everybody about the various aspects of meme culture and but the important stuff as well online.
Of course. And the Lord's work you are doing.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. She's like, I don't know what is he doing? He's dabbing. I'm like, well,
It's good that they're taking an interest in it. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, like all that type of stuff. But yeah.
I mean, as much as there is a light on the negativity, there's also so much to be proud of when it comes to female-led games. Aloy, I think, is arguably this generation's Lara Croft in the fact that she is almost a quintessential female-led gaming character. You know, perhaps helped by the massive PlayStation platform, but her story is so important, and the fact that her personality is so 3D, I think, is, again, it's just ticked all the boxes. And it's, she's not overly sexual, she's not, you know, sexualized, she's not ridiculed, she's not an idiot, she knows her stuff, she knows what she stands for, she has her beliefs, and you either identify with that or you play as her anyway. So
yeah,
I think that's really one of the biggest, I think, turns of the century moves done by gaming studios. And I think there's been a lot of games now who have seen that and gone, maybe we can do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all you can ask for.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, no, Aloy is sick. Aloy is so cool. And yeah, would love more Aloy type of characters. I mean, Senua's Sacrifice as well. That game, like that character, I'm so, like, I've not played through Senua's Sacrifice, but like I've seen people play it because I don't have an Xbox, unfortunately. But like it's just so cool. I love this content that we're getting now. Even like I know it's extremely controversial, but Forspoken, like the Tantas were sickening. They were so cool. Like they are these like women leaders who are witches, and like design wise they're sick, and like they're all varying ages, and like, you know, there was a lot of really good things about representation in Forspoken in that sense. You know, it's really sad it went the way it did, but like I really appreciated some of the things that they brought to the table with Forspoken.
I agree. And yeah, I would echo those sentiments. It is a shame because we had to make the decision to not cover the game, essentially. And for an actual controversial reason, not for what people on Twitter were doing, like pulling quotes from the main character and cuff and, you know, saying, oh, this game sucks. That was, again, that's more akin to the Last of Us 2 controversy, where you got a bunch of a word I won't say, that are just finding anything to complain about and crap on the game because it's led by a woman. It's a woman saying these cheesy things. It's a woman allowed to, you know, letting herself be free, letting herself be herself, letting herself be a dork, be a geek, you know, letting her hair down. And, you know, for some reason, the internet doesn't like that.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, definitely. Like, yeah, there's definitely there. I definitely saw some things creep up about other aspects of the sort of Forspoken team and Square Enix in general. But yeah. There was it is a shame.
It is a shame. Hopefully, the next game we'll get it right.
Let's hope.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that looked promising. I was very excited. As you said, the antagonists, they had a mystique to them that was very much alluring. I wanted to know more about them. I just had an issue with I guess how the main demographic of the game wasn't really getting a fair shake, wasn't getting respected.
Anywho,
we have Layla from Redfall, Juliana, who I guess is the antagonist, but she had a very prominent role in Deathloop, so we are seeing these characters, you know, even in the indies as well. There's a lot of games being led by women. Grid Force off the top of my head. We are seeing a very deep, I was gonna say, was non-shallow, the opposite of shallow, very non-shallow rise in stories about women in games. And I think that is arguably the first step towards making this a positive change for all. Because if they see that as the norm, you're going to see less pigs, you know, do what they did with Last of Us 2 and Forspoken.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, actually, not to like jazz up my own thing, but actually the woman who I've just had on SPG, Jacinia, she actually is a game dev based in Oregon now, but she runs her own studio called Jellyfish Parade, and she focuses primarily on creating ethically diverse visual novel experiences, and she's POC, and she's really, really, really cool. Like, I really love what she's doing. And you know, it is a thing of like, you know, she in her space, like trying to find people who look like her in visual novels, particularly, which are like, it's like that sort of romance type of like splitting narrative type of storyline, which I quite enjoy. And, but she's doing it. She's got a team, she's got everything, she's got funding, like, you know, and she's releasing her game Bell Automata on the 3rd of March, which is literally this week. I think it's like Friday. Yeah. And like it's amazing what she's accomplishing, like essentially as her own boss, as her own leader. It's incredible.
Shout out to her.
Yeah. Jacinia. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Jacinia. Jellyfish Parade is the name of her studio, which is so cute. Love it. Yeah. No, I really, really love Jacinia.
Oh, amazing. And we'll definitely make sure to put her links all over the description and stuff. Oh, maybe on the
yeah,
screen.
Somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Make sure to check out Jellyfish Parade wherever you can and get that new game.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, because I know you're very busy, just got podcasts to promote. The way we've discussed womanhood, and now I think you said, I think we can be proud of the way women are being portrayed now in games. I would like to kind of drag that across to motherhood as well, because fatherhood is something we see told a lot in games, whether we want it or not.
Yeah.
I think you can trace it back to Zeus, you know, having relations with a swan. And you know, whether it's a negative or positive, I can name several franchises off the top of my head, like God of War, Tekken, Dragon Ball, where fatherhood is a almost central point of the story.
Yeah.
How do you feel that has been carried across to motherhood? Because I feel in real life, mothers are the very most important person to a single person's life.
Yeah.
How well or badly do you feel that relationship has been told in games? And if you feel it's not been done enough, what would you like to see be done about it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, like, yeah, there's not really a lot of moms. There's not really a lot of moms. I mean, to be fair, Tekken, June was my favorite character, and technically she was a mom because she was Kazuya's mom. But she wasn't essential to the storyline. She was kind of forgotten and in favor of Kazuya and Hayachi, which I guess is fair enough, and then Jin, her son. Other than that, like, yeah, there isn't really a lot of focus around being a mother, a lot of stories about being about like a sort of motherly mother protecting it. It's why like I do actually. So Fallout 4 was my first Fallout game ever. And I chose to be the woman because like it actually gave me a storyline that was like different for me. Mm-hmm. Like I was a mom avenging the death of my son and avenging the death of my husband, you know, like it was just. Or no, I was searching for my son or whatever, avenging the death for my husband. But yeah, like it was nice. It was a change. It was fun. There's obviously like some characters that like have that sort of leadership role, but like they definitely they definitely only had like the essence of being a mother, not necessarily that they were a mother themselves. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, you have Mass Effect's FemShep, who you have to choose in order to get that storyline. Fallout, you have to choose to get that storyline. And yeah, it's hard. There's obviously some that are coming out now. There's that one indie game, which for whatever reason is escaping my mind, of a mother and a daughter on a journey. Probably my favorite interpretation of the mother-daughter relationship is like that we've seen so far is actually from Life is Strange, the original. Okay. Like there's this character Joyce, who is the mother of one of the main characters, Chloe, who's not actually a playable character. She's just like the sort of main, one of the main protagonists of the storyline. But yeah, like I loved her. I felt really attached to her. You know, I just really felt like she was just such a lovely character to experience and to be a part of, like her small bit. There's another game which I will spoil, but I won't name it, where the character you find out is actually a mom, but it's not until the very end that you realize that she is a mom. And it's kind of a shame that it's like it's until then. You know, and there's been a couple of experiences like that actually, but yeah, like there's not a lot of storylines like that. And I guess it like partially does come because of the fact that, you know, it's a lot of men who are feeling very emotional, probably very attached about the fact that they've become fathers themselves. And so they want to write a story to reflect their emotional state of the fact that they are a dad now and they feel important, which is fine, I guess. but there again, I guess it's like the demographic, right? Like there's not a lot of us. There's not a lot of moms who game. Like we are a very select bunch. I think it's going to, well, I hope it might grow in the future. You know, time will only tell how the generations go with like moms like me who grew up with games and are sharing them with our daughters. But I know as far as my general radius, I'm kind of still the unicorn that exists amongst the other moms, right? Like I know one other mom who plays Fortnite and that is all she plays. And so I cannot connect with her. Like I respect Fortnite. I want to love Fortnite, but like I don't play just one game. I'm a very diverse gamer and I want to critique and talk about narratives and themes and stuff. And she doesn't want to do that. Which I guess is fair enough. But yeah. So yeah, I don't know when we'll get more mom content. I hope that we do. Cause it is important. Like I love, I mean, the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once, I thought was just such a beautiful interpretation of what it is to be a mom, what like the challenges, particularly mother of adults, you know, how difficult it is to navigate that kind of experience, particularly coming from a background that doesn't necessarily suit the background that your child has evolved to. Like it's quite a difficult thing. But yeah, you know, I hope we do. I hope at some point we do get a game featuring a mama. But
I do too.
Yeah.
I feel that there is definitely a shift, and like, this is because of more knowledge and people not being pricks, where, you know, it's not, oh, you know, a woman has a child and then all of her, you know, personality goes away because now she's just a mother. No, yeah. You still have things that make you you, and you still have things that you enjoy and adore. And I feel like we are seeing more mothers continuing to play games, which is very important. I hope that we do see some sort of community, whether that is through content or just through Discord or meetups or something like that, something for women who do play games to connect. And so it's not just you feeling that you're the only one who can talk about
There
your
is actually a game dev community. I don't I'm
really.
not sure. Yeah, there's one where it's called like Moms Who Can't Pause on
Love
Discord. I don't have the information for it, but like I do belong to that one at least.
Sweet. Yeah, no, that's excellent.
But yeah, like it is, it would be nice to have somebody closer to home to
Yeah.
just have a cup of coffee with and just
Right.
let our kids play, and then we can just talk about the crap that other companies are doing. I don't know.
Yeah,
Yeah, just something.
but something, exactly, something to bond over, something to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very happy that there is, Discords out there. Yeah, I hope that goes not beyond that, but I hope that there are stuff in person as well, offline, that offline community as well, because it's so important to have, I guess, iron sharpening iron and having those friends that you can relate to with, whether it's particular games or just in general, the hobby. I think that's very important. And
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think we will call it there. Thank you so much, Lauren, for coming on. Yeah, would you like to shout out your platforms? Of course, the behemoth platforms of Final Fantasy Union, and she plays games, they play games as well. Please feel free to share wherever people can keep up
I
to date with you.
have a lot. I'm sorry. But yeah, no, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been really, really lovely to chat with you. And of course, yeah, like my main one is always at Level Up Lauren, and I generally share things on there. But if you want to find She Plays Pod the She Plays Games podcast is at She Plays Podcast. I couldn't get She Plays Games, somebody stole it. And at They Plays Podcast as well. Both of those are kind of our pride and joys. And then, but if you want Final Fantasy takes, it's at Final Fantasy, well, at FF Union, and it's just Final Fantasy Union on YouTube. But yeah, that's generally where you can spot me bobbing about.
I am looking forward to your next appearance on FF Union because I think you've put a lot of work into that channel, and yeah, you should definitely strut your stuff on there again every now
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll do my best. Yes, no,
and
thank you.
then. Welcome. Thanks again for coming on. Very much appreciated. And if you'd like to keep up to date with the streamcast, you can follow us at streamcast underscore on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And you can go to thestreamcast.co.uk to keep up to date with anything else that we do, whether it's podcasts, live streams, blogs, or something else. But until the next time, please take care of yourselves and your loved ones. Stay safe. We'll see you on the next streamcast.